listener production.
The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson. This is the final FOFOP of the year, and we've saved the best for last. We have Australian acting royalty, award-winning, question mark? I don't know. I'll have to fact check that
award
afterwards.
Award-nominated.
No, award-nominated.
Award-winning.
Which
definitely
is, you know, it's as good as a win. But creators of the fantastic Colin from Accounts, Patrick Bramall and Harriet Dyer, welcome back to FOFOP. You've both appeared separately, but this is your first time together. How does it feel?
Yes.
I guess we had to combine forces to land the finale.
Yeah, which is a shame that we've just sit so close to each other because we're consciously uncoupling at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, that's beautiful, man. That's great.
Very conscious.
I missed the press release. When's that happening?
Yeah. Oh, no, it's coming out tomorrow. This is our last thing. It's like a married couple.
Yeah,
goodbye.
Thing.
Oh, that's a shame because I was thinking about it and it's like, so you've both appeared on FOFOP before. We've had on FOFOP, Will and I will alternate guests and we've had people come on together. Comedy duos have even been on before, but this is probably the first time that two people who have had sex have been on FOFOP.
That you know about.
That's
and what
true,
I mean
actually.
By that is don't assume we've done it.
The umbilical
Our baby
brothers.
Stopped it.
They definitely have had sex with each other. They haven't never been on the show. I don't think so. I just grabbed the name. I apologize, umbilical brothers.
Yeah, they're at it all the time.
They've definitely done it. Yeah.
Shocking brothers.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Jesus.
So I have binged Colin from Accounts. Fuck, good. It's so good. Like it is. Really, really good. I mean,
thanks,
I'm not just saying that. Like, I genuinely go into watch my friend's stuff always with the like of, oh, God, like, this may be hard next time I see them. But I fucking love it. Like, I'm five episodes in and I'm raving about it to Jem. Like, I'm like, you've got to watch it. Our viewing habits are not unified anymore. We split off viewing habits about, I don't know, a year ago.
Good move.
Oh, it's terrible because I miss that shared experience. And I think this is the kind of show that
save your marriage.
It'll save my marriage. It'll save marriages all around the world. That's what I'm predicting.
Wow. No, that's what we tried to do.
It's such a beautiful show. Like, it's funny, but then I was not expecting how, like, heartfelt and moving it was going to be.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? We I think it was kind of unconscious. Like, we wanted to make the funnies, but we also wanted it to be about real people getting in the way of falling in love with each other.
Yeah.
And what we didn't realize is how much kind of pathos that would garner and how if we'd earned people's kind of, I don't know, affection, how much more that would mean to people. But like, this is all a little bit of a fluke. It's not that much by design, was it?
We certainly didn't like sit down and go, okay, and here's where we drop this and here's where we do that.
No.
But it was, we're just talking about it before and we're saying, it was incredibly, it was so much work. It was a lot of fucking work.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a stretch. It was like the writing came pretty easily and working together on that was like one of the most joyous bits was like finding the shit that made us laugh and also censoring out, like cutting out the stuff that was a bit too like, no, that's, you're just going for the gag there. It's just like, that's not really earned or, you know, there was a real shared sensibility. So that was kind of easy for us to do. So we didn't really plan shit. Like we didn't, of course we plotted it. We wrote it out and we did an outline.
We knew where we wanted to end up and we knew that every episode had to have stuff happen, but it just rolled out a little bit. And just kind of, I think as these two people got to know each other, and they caught feels for each other, that's when I guess the audience catches a bit more feelings for them or something.
But one of the consistent sort of things we've heard back, because we've been blown away by the response because we knew we were really happy with it. We really liked it. And because we wrote the whole thing, we acted in it, we ran it, and we edited it, we were across every frame. Like we were, you know, we knew it was definitely, and it was going to either succeed or fail. like either way, it's our show and we're happy with that. We haven't compromised anything there.
No. What we heard, like that review, review that said
it
started with dicks and piss and stuff.
That's
and
right. Shit,
It like sucker punched you with the drama.
I think around episode three, it comes and you've got the death of Meggles's
spoilers. Grandma. Spoilers, sir.
Spoilers, guys.
Spoilers.
And it's suddenly you're kind of feeling something. And then we followed up with a laugh about one of my favorite bits is David Roberts, who plays her dad, and the bit with talking about the Toyota Cressida. It's like just like incredible kind of pathos, but funny, but real. And I think some people were a bit like, and some of the reviews were a bit like, yeah, dicks and piss and poo and whatever. But then something happened.
It feels so authentic. That's what I think why it works and why you can shift gears between is because the laughs feel authentic. And maybe knowing you guys, knowing how you banter and your sense of humor, like, it comes across like the shift between dicks and piss and then like pathos like was not a surprise to me, but I can imagine if you're coming in cold. But then it's like any show where you pick up the energy of it and the nature of the dialogue and all that kind of stuff, and it sort of makes sense. Like the opening episode of any show is hard because you're establishing backstory and all that kind of stuff. But I just felt like round about, episode three, even beyond that, like it just started to kind of just like spread its wings. Like you do think it's going to be one thing. We've all seen a meet cute romantic comedy, but then there is this exploration of two people and why they are like they are. And it's not, you're not hit over the head with it. And then you're really patient in the way you reveal kind of bits and pieces about their backstory. It's really, it's so exciting to see,
that's awesome.
Thank you, Charles.
That's awesome.
I hate watching anything. And I've been corrupted by YouTube, and it's very hard for me to get back and like even concentrate for half an hour. I say that with all full of shame, but it's just like I know that like most people's brains have been corroded by like the access to entertainment. And so to hold someone's attention for a series.
I believe the publicity's gone a little nuts in Australia, and it's like we're so grateful. But Patty read a tweet that was something like, oh, great, I've got 90 seconds before I see another Colin from Accounts commercial. I've got it. Smack myself over the head or something. And we're not there. We're in Los Angeles, you know. So I'm getting pictures from friends of us on the sides of buses. My dad's like, oh, honey, your ads are on free to air now. Like they are absolutely obliterating Australia with our fucking faces. And I just want to say sorry. Because we thought this would be this little indie thing that would maybe find a voice, find an audience. We didn't know that we were going to be like, annoying people who are like, we've already watched it, now you're ruining it.
We know we're annoying people. We just didn't know that Australia would find that out.
We know that we are annoying people, but we didn't know that we would be annoying people.
Oh, right. But we know that we are annoying people.
We are annoying people.
Yeah.
You're annoying people who are annoying people who can be annoying people. So I think it's just that circuit. Annoying. It doesn't matter.
The vet situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just want to say a quick apology to everyone who's tired of it. Because you know what? We actually could kill the audience a bit in that moment. Like
a little bit.
Okay. Overexposed.
And it's so quick.
It's a really easy thing to watch because they're only short episodes. And I've heard a lot of people going, oh, look, I just sat down and watched an episode and ended up watching three. And I watched the whole thing in 2 days. And it's like it was we didn't do it because the stream is called Binge. But that was kind of the way we designed it, just to sort of chuck down like popcorn, really. I think people have already watched it and they're still getting ads for it. Because some people are going, I'm a bit late to the party, but Colin from Accounts is good. I'm like, you're not late to the party. It's only 2 weeks.
10 days.
Yeah, you're not late at all. Late to the party's in 3 years.
I did love that your actual dog, Walter, gets a shout out in the scene where you're naming it. And I'm like, and I know as a dog owner or someone who's owned a dog myself, like I know that would have been an important for you guys. Like if Binge had come to you and said, guys, you've just got to cut that reference to Walter, for whatever reason they'd said cut that out, that's where you would have stuck your flag in the ground. No, that stays.
There's no show then.
Yeah. And his little head on the armchair. And,
yeah, he's in the opening titles.
Of course, yeah. I mean, how could you miss that? That dog has the longest neck of any part dog, part mongoose, I'm convinced.
Yeah, he is. You don't get the full magnificence of his neck in the titles.
And you don't want to get the full magnificence of his neck anymore because he's a bit fucking chonky.
He's a chonky little man.
because our daughter keeps feeding him, and now his neck looks more like a footballer.
Yeah,
like he's getting that John Travolta neck. Is it where it's like his neck is getting as wide as his head? You know, like happened to Val Kilmer, happened to like John Travolta.
Collars are hard to fit. Let's just say that much because.
Yeah.
It's Junior, all one length and width.
Junior had liposuction at one point. We because dogs, and this will happen to Walter, I'm sure. Yeah, because dogs get fatty deposits all over their bodies. They get like little lumps of fat. And so the vet will give them liposuction. So Junior had a new ass. He came back from the vet with like a tight ass. I was like,
I do remember being around at one point by Junior. I don't know if it was at that point or not.
It sounds like it. You do love a new ass on a dog.
Oh, mate.
Oh.
Wally,
I get worried about Wally getting older because he's chunking. Anyway.
He's 5.
Yeah. Well, that's young. How long does a mongoose live? Probably longer than a dog anyway. You'll be fine.
Longer than a dog. They can beat snakes.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Also the best BMXs. I remember growing up, like if there was a kid in the neighborhood had a mongoose, you're like, ooh. Yeah. You know, not like my Kmart BMX that my mum and dad got me for Christmas.
Totally. The mongoose, I forgot about
I remember that. Being told that mongooses.
My cousin had one of those.
The animal. Mongoose,
yeah.
The way they beat snakes is they see everything in slow motion. I remember being told that as a kid.
Like Neo.
Yeah, like Neo. So I was like, that really stuck in my brain. And I was like, how are mongooses?
What is a mongoose?
It's a ferret. What animal would it, like what, you know, how they belong to like a canine feline? What is a, was a mongoose a dog?
It'd be more of a cat than a dog.
I'm going to tell you.
It'd be in the cat realm, I think, more than a dog realm.
Oh, no, what's it? Rodent. It's a rodent.
Do you think it's a rodent?
Well, it's not a feline.
Yeah, no, it's a bee rodent. Rodentia.
Guys,
yeah.
It's a mammal.
Yeah, and we know it's a mammal, but what species of mammal?
Carnivorous, small terrestrial. I don't know.
What?
It's the family of Herpistidae.
This would never have happened if I'd had David Attenborough on the show. He would have known exactly what kind of.
I disagree. I think, you know, David, he's long in the tooth. He's probably got producers in his ear telling him stuff. He'd be doing no better than us at this point.
Do you really reckon? No. He'd have,
look, I can't.
That's in his DNA, the mongoose info.
You're right. Yeah, he knows all about the mongoose.
There's a bunch of class, order, suborder, superfamily, and none of them make any sense to me apart from carnivorous mammal.
Yeah, okay.
Carnivorous though. There you go.
Do you know what? In Scotland, they have these things called, they're these little ferrets. Oh, I've forgotten the name of them already. Flute? No. Float? Rote.
Oh.
Flip,
groat,
gross, something like that. Grouse, no, yeah.
Grouse, maybe, yeah, grouse. I think it's grouse.
No, what?
No, grouse
is a bird.
Grouse.
No,
is
that's
a bird.
Yeah, grouse is a bird, but there is a groat. Can you look up what? Sorry, Harry, because you've got your phone. Can you look
ferrets,
up? It's like a
this
little
is the
Scottish
final
ferret.
Episode for this season. This is what we're doing.
Well, should we pivot?
Yeah, okay. What do you want to talk about?
You look up? No. What do you want to look up?
Ferret grow.
Ferret grooming near me.
Scottish ferret.
Yeah. Oh, it's a picture of your wife.
Aye.
Nah.
Gotcha.
Sexy Scottish ferret. Polecat.
Very sexy Scottish ferret.
Much really good asses, Patty, if you really want to see a good animal.
Stoat.
That's it, yeah.
Did I say stoat?
I don't know if you did, mate.
Shit. We were over in Scotland about a month ago and Gem's.
All right, mate, you're well-travelled.
Yeah, I am. I'm you know what I'm not? Is a good my immune
well
system. What the fuck is going on here? You make fun of my wife, my penis size.
Sorry. I've had one glass of red wine. Look at me. I'm a nightmare.
Very handsome, though, by all accounts. Very handsome.
My penis?
Yes.
That is, by all accounts. Where did you hear that?
From you, mate.
Oh.
You told us that.
You'll tell anyone.
Does it count if the person who owns the penis says it's handsome? Like, did you take my word for it? You thought that I'd probably be telling the truth?
You said it in such a way that I was like, he's either got a lot of great liars in his life who's seen his penis, or it's real.
There was women who had all had seen it, had contact with said penis, and they had discussed it and said it was handsome, like an English, old English gentleman. That's how they described it. Wow. Like a David Niven.
Charlie, though,
like sable silvered. Like,
I would believe that. You're
a handsome man.
You've got a glow on the skin. Your muscles are taut. Sweat. If your penis looked like a chamozzle, that would be a crime. That would
be a real shame.
That would be a shame, but it shouldn't come down to that, Harry. Like a man is more than his shriveled, ugly penis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But let's just say if you've got a nice one, it'll probably, you know.
Do you well.
Do you
It's like that buddy Pete Davidson. That's the kind of whole thing with him, right? Like people are freaking out about. Why is everyone all those hot women in love with Pete Davidson? I'm like, oh, I don't know. Why wouldn't women be attracted to like a funny, rich movie star with a huge dick? Like.
Yeah.
How do you know what that's like?
Oh, yeah, I know what that's like. I know a guy who's just like that. But, no, Marc Maron the other day in his podcast said that, oh, so did Kanye, like, just find out that Pete Davidson has a 10-inch dick and now that's why the anti-Semitism's all happening? I don't know if that's just his theory or if that's just a known theory, but it's pretty good.
Is Pete Davidson Jewish?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I guess he'd have to be for that joke to work.
Yeah.
Son of David. It's right there in the name. Bloody hell.
Son of David, come on.
Idiots.
The ABCs.
You idiots.
Oh, goodness.
Do you see him at your local Walgreens?
Oh, no, I've not run into Pete, no.
Are you in Scottsdale? You'd be living with all celebs and stuff, right? Who's the most regular celeb you see around your area?
Oh, we live around more writers,
We're not writers. In the fancy, fancy area with the big hedges and all that shit.
No, there's a lot of writers that live in this hood because there's not a lot else to do.
Writers, editors.
You know, I saw Miranda, come on.
Richardson.
What?
No, the one I love.
Cosgrave.
Oh, Miranda.
No.
Yeah, the writer.
Yeah, what's her name?
Miranda.
Oh, July. Miranda July. I'm a big fan of Miranda July. She's a bit of an oddball. I saw her at the bakery the other
Charlie's
day.
Charlie's blank expression.
Oh yeah, God. It doesn't matter.
She's an authoress.
She's a many a thing. That's probably the most starstruck I've been lately. She was in front of me at the bakery.
And she took a photo, a creepy photo of her sandals.
Oh.
And said it
to a friend.
Yeah.
And my God, guess whose feet these are?
I did something similar, Harry. I saw there's an AFL footballer I saw up in Byron Bay on his preseason break with his girlfriend and they were having pizza. And I noticed he had a tattoo of a Nike shoe on his calf. And so I surreptitiously took out my phone and zoomed in on his leg and took a photo of his leg and then sent it to my friends. And a few people in the WhatsApp were laughing. And then one of my friends said, hang on, where are you? How'd you get the photo? And when I told you, he said, you can't do that. You can't take photos of people's legs and send it around. I was like, yeah, I probably didn't invade his privacy.
I hope he's sponsored by. Nike. Otherwise, it's a bit of a weird.
I thought it was a weird thing. It could be a comment on capitalism or something like that. You know, mass produced sport.
I doubt it.
I wouldn't have thought so.
How is Byron? God, I miss that place.
Me too. Oh, you know, it went through a pretty hard time about a year ago. It was pretty nightmarish.
Yeah, it got a bit wet, didn't it?
12 months ago. That was pretty full on. I've never been through something like that before.
Have you bounced back?
Areas have, but everyone is still, because El Nina is still, she's still going. Like the weather's been pretty good lately, but and it rains heavily up here because it's a subtropical region. So it's about, but when it rains now, everyone gets a bit triggered because it just happened so quickly. It was literally, the previous summer we'd had 2 days of rain, 3 days of rain, a bit of water and we just thought it was that again. And then friends started sending me photos saying, are you okay? And it was like photos of my town and then, you know, other areas. And they're just like underwater. And you just had no idea because it happened within like 24 hours, 48 hours. And then obviously the photos out of Lismore. And then I started doing some volunteering in the cleanup. And that was just like, that was some of the most traumatic things I've ever seen. Yeah, man. Like an entire town, there was 15 meters of water, like in height, just flowed through Lismore, basically took out the entire town. So you're talking about 30,000 homeless families, you know, the entire town was devastated. Like I went in and did this cleanup and it was like driving through a horror movie, like Godzilla, like the whole town was just like upended. Everyone was in their houses just dragging out everything they had onto the street to throw it out because you can't. The thing about like a flood is it's not just the flood happens, then it just waterlogs and ruins everything, the sewage system.
Once it recedes, then it's all
fuel, everything. And so
what's what's the danger with like electricity and stuff at this point? Does the power all just go off and then it's just this swamp?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So the they were without power for I think a couple of weeks. I mean, the bizarre thing about it was like the sort of rescue effort started, and it was all just like local community groups, like literally people on social media coordinating drop-offs and cleanups, and that's how I was sort of finding out about things. You know, you just jump in a van with someone who was heading somewhere, and you'd volunteer for the day. But there was no, like, I just in my mind assumed when something like that happens, the government sends in the army and they start putting up sandbags. There was nothing for like 2 weeks. And I remember I posted something on Instagram because I'd been in Lismore, and it was, you know, there was just street after street after street. And Lismore's not like, you know, it's a lower socioeconomic area than in Byron Shire. And so a lot of people, they don't have insurance. They don't have much. And what they did have was just now garbage on the street to be collected. And so I was taking photos of all these just like piles of rubbish. And I wrote something about like, what is going on? Like, where's the government? And I had a friend who was in the Army Reserve call me to say, I don't understand why the Army's not there. This is what we are trained to do. Like, you know, they go into disaster areas and they civilians should not be doing, you know, moving dangerous objects and reconnecting power and all that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping what it was the incompetence of the previous government and not the fact that this is a largely Greens left voting area, because that was the conspiracy theory. That was certainly the perception from a lot of people living here, is that we've been forgotten.
They didn't send help because they weren't their voters.
Well, when they did allocate relief funding, they allocated it along party lines. So there is like a Liberal district which got funding, and everyone else got a big fuck you.
Until is so messed up.
Until the press got onto it, and then they were like, oh, no, of course. We intended to fund. It's, no, you didn't. You were just trying to look after your Nationals and Liberal voters. Yeah, so that was all a bit full on.
What's this more like now?
What's Lismore like now?
I haven't been there for a few months, but it's sort of partially rebuilt. But they did have flooding again not that long ago. I mean, this has been the third, believe it or not, there's been climate emergencies all over the place, as you would know, California.
I don't believe it.
It's funny, actually, this trip I just did, I went to New Zealand, LA, London, Portugal.
All right, mate, you're well traveled. Jesus.
And then Southeast Asia. And everywhere was having bizarre weather. Like New Zealand was like the longest snow season. London, it was like 23 degrees, hot and sunny. Like it was just everywhere you're going, it's like, nah, this can't be good.
That's a strange coincidence and nothing more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure this will resolve itself.
You just packed incorrectly, Charlie. Don't blame us.
Well, in London too, you'd have conversations with people because they get so excited about the sun. And they're like, oh my God, how great's this weather? And then you'd see the penny drop for them, but that's bad. Like that shouldn't be. Yeah. It's October. Yeah. It shouldn't be like hot and sunny.
We're supposed to be mad and looking for vitamin D right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you do all that travel with baby?
Yeah, that was
amazing.
Iona had just turned 3. She was actually great, like on the long haul flights. But the actual being in you, because you know we're constantly moving, and you know you'd rent somewhere, and it was a bit of a punish, to be honest. By the end of the 4 weeks, it was more like an endurance test than like a holiday. Yeah. You know, particularly for Jem, because Iona got very clingy to mum. And I don't know what Joni's like, but you know, Jem's very much the default. And I almost aggravate the situation by trying to help. You know, you'll try and sort of like jam yourself in there to give mum a chop out, but that just kind of increases the tantrum or makes things worse. And so Jem was just like had this child on her for 4 weeks. It was just.
We haven't quite got to that point because she's only 14 months. So I don't think we've got to that.
He's being modest. He is her guy. Like, I had a great week with her last week because Patty was in New York filming Evil, which is a CBS drama. And I would have had to have given her to a nanny.
Because Harry's shooting her show.
Because I'm shooting American Auto. And so it would have been.
All right. We're all busy. We're all got shit on. Jesus Christ.
Calm down. It would have been a really weird week whereby Patty wasn't here. I could leave at, you know, 5:30 in the morning and get home at 7 o'clock at night. And like this nanny would just have to be with her all the time. And Joni, this is a new nanny. Like she hasn't had anything like this. But I got a false positive at work. Well, they just call it a positive. And so they shut the show down for 10 days. And I just got to spend time with Joni, and it was so good because Patty wasn't here and I became her default, because I haven't been her default. It's been Pat because I've been working. But also I think he's just preferable to me in every way. He's stronger. His voice is lower. He's cuddly. I'm this kind of, I don't know.
Your words.
Also, maybe it's a daddy. Actually, no, because Iona's into Jem. Anyway, I'm saying anything to make myself feel better.
Don't worry, Harry. I did the same thing. Like, I have been the one, like Jem in Iona's first, like, 2 years, Jem was the one doing most of the work. I was doing most of the child rearing, but I still was getting none of the kind of love. Like, Jem would come home like fucking, like David Bowie entering arena, like Iona would just lose her fucking mind. And I'm like, hey, don't forget me, the guy who like got you up this morning and made you breakfast and took you to the park and put you down for a nap and read the stories. It's like, fuck you, old man. Boring. Boy, bringing on Bowie. Woo! Like getting the lighter
That's
out
so
and stuff.
Funny. Yeah, we don't have that. She almost punishes me a bit, I think. I come home from a long day and I got home at 7:25 to do the last 5 minutes of her day. And she like looked up from her book on Patty's lap, like, oh yeah. You, is it? And then looked back to the book. And I'm like, okay, yeah. And then she kind of looked over the book again and I was like, can I read the story? And she just like had no vibe for me.
You just got to get in there and just like, it's just having FaceTime with her. And then the more FaceTime you have, the more she goes, you're my guy.
I think it's
because Harry's been more employed than I have. I've been doing for the last bunch of time. And it's like, so I'm her guy.
From what I understand, the allegiance just shifts. I'm just waiting for my time. That's what, other people have told me, oh, don't worry. She'll get to this age. She'll get to that age. And then it'll be all about dad. And I'm like, please God, let that happen in the next 5 years. Cause I can only take so much. My ego is so fragile. It's like, I've actually had to talk to my therapist about it. Cause I'm like, I know I should be, I'm the mature one in this situation. I know that she's a child who doesn't really have a grasp of what she's saying. But when she tells me that she doesn't want me, she wants mum, I get like, but what about me? Like literally yesterday I went to pick her up from daycare and I rode my bike up because that's a fun thing we do. We get on the bike and we can stop at the shops on the way home, all that kind of stuff. And I turned up, hey, I'm here to get you. And the first thing she said was, where's mum? And I'm like, but I'm here with a bike. I want mum. Okay, mum's not here. And it's like, come on, kid, just give me a little something, please.
That sucks. It's hard to, but even just today, like we've got like Harry said, we've got this new nanny who's great. And
she's from Flushing, Queens?
Yeah.
And everyone else is wearing tan. But
yeah,
she was
red.
Yeah.
She has style, she has flair. I mean, she's there. Yeah. That's how she became the nanny.
Yeah. Well, how did she, like, what happened? What previous job did she have?
Well, her boyfriend kicked her out in one of those crushing scenes.
Where was she to go? What was she to do?
Well, she was out on a fanny.
Yeah. Which means her vagina, right?
Which means her vagina. Yeah. So she really had to fucking, she was really in all sorts.
It's not easy. I will say, as someone with one, to fall over and just land on your vagina.
You have a very bendy back.
Yeah.
And I feel like she was thrown by the boyfriend with a great velocity, like out on the curb. And she was like,
like in the splits, which is why she landed on her fanny.
Maybe it was like a low wall or something. She like smashed it like that gymnast on the Wild World Sports who ran into the horse. Like maybe it was that.
Did we do a fire hydrant? Like, just
is
that?
Veg first on the fire hydrant. Just like,
Mr. Sheffield.
I can't.
Anyway.
In this case,
so anyway.
Mr. Sheffield.
So I'm Mr. Sheffield, right? And
CC.
You're very much CC. And Walter's the kids, I guess. Anyway.
Walter's Niles.
Walter is Niles. This actually has legs.
The butler, yeah.
Anyway, so today, the nanny's doing her thing. And I'm kind of just being in the office and trying to do shit and trying to do stuff. And I came out to do a bit of like, hey, here's a bit of a dad moment. Hey, I'm just going to breeze by and say hi. She didn't want to bar me. And I was no, this is me. Like, you know me. You love me. And
you love me. It's Petty Man.
Yeah, the upside down thing, which she loves, hated it, screamed. And I'm like, I just had to shamefaced her to give her back to the nanny. And I'm like,
so I feel with you.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, fuck you. Like, a little bit. I'm like, fuck you, Joni. Like, I don't have to be your friend. Like, fuck, it hurts. It hurts my feelings.
It's so anyway, amazing.
We're doing well. We're adults that are raising a very well-centered human being.
Yeah.
Well, you know what my this is what my therapist said about it, because I was like, you know, when she does stuff like that to me, I can't, like, I know I want to be the bigger man, but I can't help but be like hurt. And my therapist said, but it's because that's a child who's triggering your inner child. Like that, all that is just reminding of you when you were a kid and you're in the playground and a kid wouldn't give you attention, or when your parents, you know. So it's just, it brings up all this stuff that you haven't thought about in a long time and in a really raw kind of base level. It's just that
you never resolved it. You just grew out of that age. You're like, thank fuck, I don't have to deal
exactly.
with that.
I'm out of high school. I don't have to deal with this anymore.
Kids have no social niceties. So if they don't want you, they don't want you.
Yeah.
They're not going to pretend. Like, that's what hurts the most, is that they're so brutally honest. And
I think if she started pretending and I knew she was pretending, that would maybe hurt more. I think I prefer brutal
honesty. She's faking it.
Yeah.
Yeah, then don't fake it with me, mate. I'm your dad.
It's like when, did you ever hang out with like the popular guy at high school one day? Like maybe the popular kids talk to you or play with you, and then you thought that relationship was going to be forever. And then the next day you go to school and then they don't want to talk to you anymore. That's what it's like with Iona, where I've had a breakthrough moment. We've just danced to bloody Let It Go. Surely I'm the new favorite. And then it's like she'll do the, oh, it's you. When you walk in, it's like, but remember, I opened myself up to you. I put on the Elsa dress. I was Elsa for you because I thought that's what you wanted. But no, that's still not good enough.
You want it too much. It sounds like you've got a cat there. It sounds like you've created a cat and she knows that when you want it, you're not going
to
get it.
Jam has actually said that to me, that I'm too desperate to be liked. She said, if you just chilled out, dude.
It's one of your defining characteristics, Charlie. That and
That and what?
It's a kid combo, to be honest.
That and your handsome penis. Oh.
Yeah. It's not your usual cocktail.
No, that's
a very handsome penis and a desperate
insecure. Loved.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder, man, maybe I should let my penis do the talking from now on.
You should.
Not with your kid, though.
Yeah, not.
Well, not again. I'll tell you that not much. Again. Not again. I learned that lesson the hard way. So can I ask, coming back to Oz to make Con from accounts, like how important was that for you? Like, was that a big deal to come back? Because you've obviously had a lot of success working overseas. You've had success in Australia as well, but this is your kind of first vehicle together, this show that you created. Yeah. How important was it coming back to Australia?
It was integral to the tone of the show. Like that was all the stuff that we came up with, the characters and all the stuff we wrote, it was all in the Australian vernacular, because we did have people going, oh, look, just make it here. Like the setup, the meet cute and that sort of, it all works.
It could be anywhere.
Could be anywhere.
But it's like we just find Aussies so funny, and it was like just time to try and bring another, you know, Australian comedy to our canon
and
down
we've,
there.
And we've bowerbirded all the shit from our own lives or friends' lives or whatever. So we could have had a crack at doing it in America, but it wouldn't have felt as authentic and inside it as we obviously feel with our own culture. So that's why. And it was great just to come home and work at home and all that sort of, although COVID was in full flush in Sydney at that time, so it was...
As well as the rains.
Yeah, it wasn't quite the homecoming we anticipated, but it was awesome.
It was so great, and we couldn't have done it anywhere else. It just feels Australian, and we're Australian, and so if we want to make something that feels really, I don't know, just very real, we would have had to pivot too much to set it in, I don't know, Chicago or something.
And who cares about
it? And we also wanted to give back to the industry that gave so much to us and continues to, like the crews there and
honestly,
and the actors and all the people.
That was a really nice byproduct of it. But honestly, truthfully, I think us having had some success, a modicum of success overseas, helped us get the show made. I mean, Binge have been fantastic with us and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think there was a little bit of Hollywood dust on us, you know, like, oh, okay, well, they're over there, you know, just that stupid thing that all us, you know, Australians go, oh, they've been overseas, they've been in LA or Hollywood, whatever.
They must know what they're talking about, and we don't.
No, we don't know much more than we did back then. But I think it would have been harder for us to get this show made if we'd never left Australia. It's that weird catch 22 because we're slightly shinier living overseas. But I'm very happy to take advantage of that and then make something back in Australia.
But that's one of the ways I described it to Jem. I think maybe even if it's a subconscious level, the show feel like the experiences and the lessons you've learned working on American productions have influenced the show, but in the best ways. Like I think it, absolutely. Like it still feel, I 100% agree with the Australian flavor of it and the way you've cast it. And even if people just come in for one line, like it's so brilliantly cast, and there's obviously such an affection for the little nuances of Australian language and culture and interactions. And I was saying to Jem, I'm just going to keep using Jem as a sounding board so it doesn't sound like I sat here having these thoughts to myself, but I did say this to Jem, that it felt to me like so specifically like a Sydney story as well, like, but not in a heavy-handed kind of way, but there is just a sort of flavor to that kind of, I don't know, inner west part of Sydney where, you know, Ashley's living in this share house that, you know, probably with, you know, at least one person, but maybe more, you know, it just had this, it felt really authentic. But on top of that was this kind of sophistication in the storytelling and the layered plots. And you don't often see that or always see that in Australian productions because of like limitations on budget or whatever. But I think that, you know, maybe your experiences working in the States on American production has just sort of given this a level of sophistication that maybe other shows haven't had.
Maybe so. I hadn't really thought of that.
Maybe like because some episodes have an A storyline, B, and some even have a little C storyline. Maybe it's a bit of that.
But I think also, I need to think about that a little bit more. But I think another thing is that what we got to do with our producers at Easy Tiger and the streamer Binge, the people there all championed us so hard and supported us so well that they really let us, like I said at the start, like be completely across the tone. So it was either going to live or die based on what we wanted. They gave us very few notes.
Yeah.
And the ones they did, we pushed back on and they went, okay, don't worry about it.
Some of them we took, like the good ones, the ones that were like, oh, yeah, why didn't we think of that? We took. For instance, like Helen Thompson's first line, Aaron's been raped at the, you know, it's one of those ones that's a bit like Ricky Gervais kind of makes this point all the time. You can say something without making a joke about something, you know.
And the subject of the joke is not the target of the joke. The target of the joke is something
else. Exactly. Yeah. And one of the big notes from Binge was like, we shouldn't be joking about rape. And it was like, absolutely. But we're not. We are shining a light on a character who brings drama to herself. Like she's one of the, she'd show up in Lismore and have no connection to Lismore. Do you know what I mean? Because she needs to be the center of all drama all the time. Right. Yeah. And that's who she is. And it felt like a perfect
introduction
to her. But like, and that was one that, bless them, we just had to have a couple of phone calls and they kind of said, that's okay. Okay, we trust you. And they sat and listened to it in the table read and listened to Helen do it. And they were across the edit. So there's moments where we said, we hear you. We're not just going to say no, but we're going to talk to you about why we're going to do it and why it's going to be okay. And we'll show it to you in the edit. But we were in the edit. We had the opportunity to kind of soften blows where we knew we were going to get some pushback and you know, come halfway on a few things.
So I think I feel like that's a rare thing to happen anyway, but particularly in Australia for the amount of shows that we make, that the creators are allowed the space and the freedom to execute their vision as they want it.
That's very much actually something from America that we took, which is that US showrunner model whereby
that's true.
You write it, you produce it, you're in the edit. You are across everything from page one to page 100. It's done. It's yours, right? That was very much an American thing that we
did. It's very American because I remember from, you know, hearing about showrunners from maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago is when the showrunner model sort of was on the rise in America. And what I didn't realize actually until I got to America was that showrunner is not a credit. It's just a way of talking about the people who, the head writer maybe, or one of the producers. And you don't get a fee for showrunning either. No. Like, you get your fee, we did for acting, for writing, and for executive producing. But there's no showrunning fee. It's essentially
it's just a like role you just handed unpaid. The keys to your life over to the show. And you are the show.
But that's great. Like, it's authorship, really. It's someone taking charge for the creative direction and vision of a show, which is always much more interesting when it's singular than designed by committee. I mean, you understand why the network or the platform has to have like breaks on the creative, and they need to double check jokes about rape and all that kind of stuff.
But
it's still creative driven, you know. That's the great thing about it. And I think because your show feels so authentic, because I actually had that same thought about the scene where Gordon goes on the date with Belinda, Christy Whelan Brown.
Mm.
And he says his pronouns, and she's like, that's actually, and the line that Gordon says is, well, it's not trans language, it's language. And I think that's a perfect kind of encapsulation of that whole subject, because you can talk about stuff. It is all just language. Like, Sam Harris has this interesting, Sam Harris has a lot of interesting opinions, but about the N-word. And he says that, like, it's not this magical thing that makes people racist. Like, words don't magically make people racist. It's the application and intention behind the word. Like, you know, maybe we've got to a point where everyone, you know, freaks out about this word, but let's actually recognize that words don't control people. Words, they're not magic. It's a way of expressing, but who is doing the expressing and what are their intentions? That's what has to be looked at.
That is a very spicy take on the N-word. I mean, I haven't done a lot of Sam Harris, and it's like
I've done a bunch of Sam Harris.
It's
because the take's on the N-word, it's suddenly very spicy. But
I know what you're saying, and I know what he's saying. It's all about intention, and that.
But that's so interesting too, because I listened to that great John Ronson podcast called, I think it was called How Things Fell Apart. It's a fucking awesome series. This podcast about the culture wars as they are now, and, you know, talking about abortion or talking about trans rights, things. And he, each episode is about a thing, and he goes back in time to where the beginning of this debate began. And in one of them, he's talking about racism, and he talks to the author of that book. I think it's called White Fragility.
Mm.
And she says, categorically, she believes that intention doesn't matter at all. And I was like, oh, you've lost me. You've lost me. I was on board. And then I went, oh, no, you've lost me. There's a divide there where the criminal system is based on, you know, mens rea and the thought, the intention, and actus reus, which is the act, the crime itself. And I suppose she might argue that, the criminal system is based on white privilege, which is probably not entirely wrong. But that idea of intention doesn't matter at all is like, I don't think I can get on board with that. I can't get on board with it.
Yeah. Mm. That's why I think that, you know, it works in your show, though, is because, I mean, you pretty much, you guys explain that and display that through the behavior of the characters, and because you understand where the characters are coming from as well. Like, I just finished episode 5, The Good Room. I think that's episode 5.
Yeah.
And it's such a brilliant episode. Like, it's so great. Like, it's so contained. Like, it's very challenging to not, like, you know, there's no bells and whistles to it. It's all just character development.
Is this the dinner?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's episode 6.
Okay, oh, it's episode 6. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Like, it just, I was so astounded by how you're able to create so much action with actually very little action. It was just all about character reveal. And when you start to realize what is going on for Ashley, and, you know, this dynamic with her mother, and then Darren is the brilliant kind of boyfriend, like, just so much tension, and the stakes are so high. And it's like, it was just a perfectly weighted episode. But that's, I think, is a perfect example of, you know, you don't know that her mother necessarily is, she's unaware of what she's doing sometimes. She thinks that she loves her daughter, and that she thinks that Ashley knows I love her, but she never expresses it. You know, she never, and doesn't sort of see a problem with that. And I think it's not resolved with a neat bow. It's not like, you know, she comes to her senses. She probably, I've got three episodes to go. Maybe she comes to her senses, but that's life. You know, people hold terrible views and have terrible opinions, but it doesn't mean like he dismisses them out of hand. Like they still have value to some extent. You know, I think we live in an era now where people love to dismiss people based on one, you know, a comment that they've made or views that were expressed, but you've got to look at the totality of what someone has done, because everyone has terrible opinions at some point in their lives.
That's right. And also one of the things that, you know, in that same conversation, people are so triggered and so
snowflakes, mate, bloody fucking snowflakes everywhere.
Is it the sense of humor as well? Like that's why, like that trans language bit is so much more interesting and probably layered and fun, and because it's funny, like you can reduce it all and you can laugh at it. It's so much more interesting and probably articulate than me talking about white fragility or whatever the fuck. Like I think that's one of the things that if you can see something authentic and laugh at it, that's our favorite thing to do. Like to keep that perspective, because comedy, to laugh at something, it already has a perspective attached to it. And that's why I think it's where I want to be.
Yeah, that character that Darren plays, we wanted to, you know, if we get the opportunity, we hope we do, to do season two, we want to play with how, like, he's such a cancelable person, right? He is already getting into hot water in this season, you'll see, like, in EP8. But, like, we want to deal with we want to look a little more into someone like him, and how he can just be fired now for bad conduct, and as he should be, if he is behaving badly.
Yeah.
But we want to give him a little mouthpiece as well, because there's people like him who are kind of dying on the vine because they don't know how to adapt.
Yeah.
They don't know how to adapt to this ever-changing world, and it's not like we want to give. Finally, can the straight old white man get a break? I'm not saying that, but like it's an unpopular mouthpiece right now, and I think it's quite a funny one because it is dated, and it is. But everyone knows this person who's sitting at Christmas this year, going, "What is she? They anyway?" Yeah. Like
I LBG2QIOMS. Exactly. I don't get it. It's
everyone has that uncle or that stepdad or something where you're just like, "Shut up, Cameron."
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, shut up, Cameron, if you are listening. Shut up, Cameron. We fucking know who you are, Cameron.
Yeah, you know.
It's just, Well, there's so many opportunities for us to, like, because it's not like we necessarily hold those views, but it's funny to us to flesh out the family like that.
But it's also this idea that people aren't redeemable or, you know, or able to change. Like, you often sort of, I always, you know, every few months when they dig up some celebrity's tweets from 12 years ago, and I'm like, fucking hell, man, if Will and I live in terror that people will listen to the first few episodes of TOEFOP from like we recorded in 2010, because we were trying to be like Kevin Smith on this podcast, like just some horrible, bad, like misguided kind of comedy that I'd be cringing at now. But I would like to think that in the intervening years that I've grown and changed, and maybe my views of things have changed. And I know there are audience listeners to the show who have been with us from the start who will often bring up, wow, like when you listen to you guys at the start, it was so kind of frat boy, it was so juvenile, and then, you know, our views have changed. But that's only because they've had the benefit of 400 episodes to hear the evolution, whereas someone will go, well, this is who you are now, and this is something you said 12 years ago, you're clearly the same person. It's like, that's ridiculous. Like, people change in the course of weeks and months, and let alone years.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So what groups do you really hate?
Yeah, let's go. Oh, my God,
let's get into it.
oh, my God. Canberrans?
How dare you?
It's fine. I'm joking. We're going to Canberra for Christmas. Yeah. It's going to be great.
We leave in about 3 days, and we've got a 15-hour flight with a very tall 14-month-old.
Well, yeah. So we never flew with Iona. She flew when she was like 6 months old. We went to New Zealand, then COVID happened. So we actually skipped that whole awkward, like, you know, infant traveling phase. I don't know what that's going to be like for you guys.
Look, she's she doesn't like being physically manipulated, and she doesn't know what anything means.
Yeah,
so she'll want to walk down to 58K and pick up their small bottle of red wine and put it in her mouth, and they won't like that.
More like walk up to 58K. I think we're in about 184K. Yeah,
oh, we are. We're deep
right by the toilets.
We were like, the price gouging right now is. We were like, should we treat ourselves? We were like, you know, with Joanie, as we stretch out, like, let's just have a look at what business is charging.
Yeah. It was $38,000.
Got to sell the house.
American.
Yeah. 38,000.
US. And so we were like, oh, whoa, what about premium economy? Come on, guys.
18,000.
Yeah, 18. And we were like, okay, what's economy? It's $9,000 for the two of us.
Yeah, that's insane.
We didn't even have to pay for Joanie. Yeah. Just us.
Yeah.
And she's taller than me.
Yeah.
We're heading over in 3 days with a rowdy toddler. And I don't know. I mean, we got those seats with the bassinet in front of them. So I just figure anyone around us, like, that's on them. You only have to look at the seating chart and know that a kid's going to be there.
You got to get over that thing of, like, what the other people think. I mean, we had the same situation.
I have a real problem with that.
Yeah, it's hard, but just put yourself in other people's shoes and fuck them. I mean, if everyone was a baby, if they don't understand that at this stage, if you don't understand what a baby on a plane is, then fuck you. You're the one with the problem, not the person with the baby.
She's just a party girl. She's going to think it's a rave. And so it's just going to be like
14 hours is actually nothing. It's nothing. You'll be fine. It'll be over before you know it. It's like free movies on an iPad, asleep, food, and then you'll be in Australia.
This kid doesn't watch an iPad.
Oh, yeah, of course. She's too young. Not even Wiggles?
Give her an iPad. She'd just swipe around. Like,
there's one thing she looks at. It's called Hey Bear, like infant, this like just very high contrast.
It's crack cocaine for brains.
Essentially.
It's terrible.
Oh, my God. I just realized. Fucking holy shit. So Iona loves blue, like most toddlers. I think 50% of Iona's personality is built off Bluey. Like, the gag she cracks, she loves calling me dude and big fella. Like,
big fella's good.
She goes nuts for it. I just realized that I could introduce her to Uncle Rad. You could record something for her, couldn't you?
Oh, for a fee, absolutely.
For a fee. Absolutely. What are you on, Cameo?
For a donation to your favorite charity?
Yeah. My charity's me.
Joni likes the first she likes the opening credits of Bluey, and then she's off.
Well, Bluey's gone fucking crazy over in the States too, isn't it? Like, I saw
it's huge.
That's amazing.
It was in the Macy's parade.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving.
They were on I think the act David and Melanie.
Yeah, they're on Jimmy Fallon or something.
Jimmy Kimmel or one of those?
Jimmy Kimmel, yeah, one of the Jimmys.
They won a BAFTA. Bluey won a BAFTA the other day.
It's an incredible show. Like
Natalie Portman went on it to impress her kids.
Yeah, the writing's amazing. Like, I honestly feel like it is one of the best Australian shows behind Colin from Accounts.
Thank you. And they are in the same genre.
Very similar.
Very similar genre.
Both about dogs.
Many's the case. In fact, pretty much every time we put on Bluey, Joni will walk out of the room and we'll sit there watching it.
And one of us will cry.
It's sad. It's a sad
Sleepy Time? Show. Are you talking about Sleepy Time? That episode, Sleepy Time?
No, there's one about the mum where Chili's like, I wanted you to be the best. And then another mum sat her down and went, Chili, you're doing a great job. Oh, yeah. And I was just like,
that's me. I'm that talking regular.
Harry, you're doing good.
I teed up the other day. I mean, I had a bunch, but one that I remember is when Bandit's trying to teach him chess.
Oh, yeah.
And it's way beyond them.
Yeah.
And then the mum sums it up. It's like, because the king just wants you to be smart and wants you to be the best because he won't be around to protect you. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. It happens. I mean, I take so many parenting tips from Bandit Healer. Like, he's the best dad going around. He knows when to be playful. He knows when to like put his foot down. It's an amazing.
I've listened to Hamish Blake's podcast, How Other Dads Dad. Have you heard that?
Oh, no, because I make my own parenting podcast called Dad Pod. How many episodes of that have you listened to?
Yeah, I listen to that a lot as well.
Have you actually?
Yeah. I've done four seasons.
Yeah. Season three dropped away a bit, but I'm back on board. But they talk about Bandit. He talks about Bandit Healer every time, being the standard of dadding, and he is.
There's two TV dads that I think are the gold standard. There's one is Bandit Healy. The other one is John Goodman and Roseanne. Dan Connor is the best TV dad. If you go back and watch the old episodes of Roseanne, he's funny, he's loving, he stands up for his family, he's playful, he's everything. Because my father died when I was quite young, so as a teenager, I would watch Roseanne and be like, I want Dan Connor to be my dad. Like, he just seemed like the best. He was the best TV dad. Blue collar, big heart, loved his wife, loved his kids. Probably should lay off, like, you know, bacon sandwiches and stuff. But apart from that.
He has. He looks very different now, and he looks quite
grey.
I mean, they all do. The lighting, there's something in that show now. It just looks like.
Yeah, is it still going, the new Roseanne?
I don't know.
Connors. It's called The Connors.
The Connors. I think it's over now.
No, it's still going.
Oh, what? My goodness.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
John Goodman. Yeah, okay, okay.
Yeah, well, live. That's a good call. That's a great call.
We live in an era where there are shows that exist that run for multiple seasons that you will never, ever, ever see because it's just too much to choose from. But one show that people should definitely catch is Colin from Accounts. Every episode available on Binge right now. Patrick Bramall and Harriet Dyer, thank you so much for coming on FOFOP. It was I was compelled. I actually messaged you about it before I actually watched the show, and I was just so relieved, not just relieved, but exultant that I love the show so much. I couldn't wait to talk to you guys about it. And I can everyone, check it out over summer, over Christmas, and spare a thought for Patty and Harry, who'll be getting on a plane in row 186 on the toilets, economy class.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are bloody Australian acting royalty. You should be, the government should be organising a private jet to get you home. That's what I'm saying.
That's what we said.
Johnny Depp styles.
Yeah.
Amber Heard
style. bring Walter. He can be your pistol and boo.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, people are going to, I don't know. We're actually joking. Like, are we going to get recognised, you know, from
I'd love to see you guys now, just walking like, down just the street. The like you get your hair done and makeup, just waiting to be recognised.
Yeah.
I'm just walking around in jeans and a red top, flashing my tit to passers-by going, come on,
recognise this.
Look at it.
Look harder. Look at it.
Well, we did save the breast for last. Patty Bramall, Harriet Dyer.
Just a nip of time.
Okay.
Thanks so much, guys.
Ariola.
Thanks, Charlie. Ariola.
How long? Not long. Everyone relax.
Listener.